Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com.
Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hello, Greenhorns. This is Severin. This is Greenhorns Radio, a radio show about young farmers, featuring young farmers with conversations between young farmers and for the benefit of the future of agriculture. Hello, Greenhorns. This is Severin. This is another episode of Greenhorns Radio, radio for young farmers, by young farmers, recorded today from the Hudson Valley of New York. But I'm joined from those in the middle of the country from Prairie Crossing Farm. Hello. Welcome to the show. There's many of you today. It's a really big deal.
Yeah, three of us today.
Would you mind introducing yourself and your farm there?
Yeah, so I'll start off. My name is Logan, and I'm the farm educator at Prairie Crossing Learning Farm.
My name is Amir, and I am the senior crew leader this year at Prairie Crossing Learning Farm.
And I'm Eric Carlberg, and I'm the farm manager of the Prairie Crossing Learning Farm.
So for those who are familiar with the farm incubator model and or who attend many conferences of land trusts and progressive farm stewardship, farm tenure, land access topics, Prairie Crossing comes up all the time. You're like the golden child. But maybe not all of our listeners attend all those conferences. So could you give a little backstory on the Prairie Crossing project?
Sure. I'd be happy to. This is Eric, by the way. Prairie Crossing, in a nutshell, is a housing development that was developed with a conservation ethic. We sit on approximately 700 acres that used to be farmland that has now become engulfed by suburbs. There were plans to build about 200 housing units here, and zoning was starting to get underway. A group of local folks decided they wanted to see something much different happen here. What happened was much of the land in that 700-acre plot was devoted to prairie restoration. 100 acres was set aside for sustainable farming. And about 375 homes were built, rather than 2,000. There's roughly 70% open space here that has been incorporated into the design. So we're a part of that preserved farmland. There's a 40-acre farm, very successful, called Sand Hill Organics. There's a Farm Business Development Center, or Farm Incubator Program, that uses a portion of that land, and then there's the educational farm. And today you're hearing from the three of us who are all part of that educational farm known as the Prairie Crossing Learning Farm.
So it really is a crossing, in that the crossing over the kind of whole spectrum between habitat conservation, educational farming, incubating farmers, and also having a commercial production farm.
Yeah, that's correct. And we have a farm that really competes strongly in the Chicago region, part of the local food movement, real model here. And we also work with kindergartners in the garden, sometimes 3-year-olds, giving them a chicken to hold for the first time. So, yeah, there's a lot of different things that happen here.
And I think it's nice to see that not always is it super compatible to have kindergartners on a commercial farm, and that, the solution to that is to accommodate them maybe separately in time, if not in space. But maybe you guys could reflect a little bit how you arrived at Prairie Crossing, and especially since this is mostly geared towards the listenership of young farmers, what it's like to plug into an institution that was kind of formulated before your time and has an institution that has a certain mandate, and then, you know, how that can function professionally for you as an opportunity to, you know, inhabit a role, and then if that role can evolve or where you see it kind of in your own professional trajectory. But,
yeah, this is Amir. I'm the senior crew leader, and this is my fourth year working with the Prairie Crossing Learning Farms, and I can say that I progressed through the years working here. I started as a crew member and worked my way up, sort of seeing the changes around the farm, but not only changes on the farm, but changes within myself. Before I found this program, I really wanted to go into law, politics. I wanted to be a lawyer, you know, just something that would make me successful, you know, financially, and that's what I thought I wanted to do. But learning more about sustainability and agriculture really just opened my eyes to, like, what I actually really wanted to do, which is something to deal with outside land, maybe farming or become an environmentalist. But being here on the farm has changed my course, and I'm grateful for that because now I really understand what, you know, sustainability means to me or what it means to anyone else. And it's really given me a chance to sort of tell my friends all about what I'm doing, and they really respect the fact that, you know, I am young and I kind of really love doing what I do, and I think it's cool that they're listening and they're sort of getting involved. You know, whenever we have volunteer days, they like to come along or listen and hear more about it. So I think I've sort of evolved with the farm along with the program, and I think it's really just been a great opportunity for me to be here working alongside with great people and learning so much at such a young age, because not many, you know, really know or understand the value that comes with farming.
So in that sense, even though the farm is not, you know, ancient like an agricultural village, the fact that there are certain principles bound up in the farm's kind of institutional path means that there is an expectation and an upfrontness to the ethic and the purpose of the farm, and that maybe can help and or enhance the cultural and educational value that you get by working there.
Yeah, definitely. It's really definitely let me see and understand the culture, and not even that, but me using the resources.
How's that?
I can.
That's a lot better.
That's good. I can hear you great. So I guess to frame that as a question, in the community of people who live there and who are kind of constitute your culture of your Prairie Crossing farm, what are some of the expectations that they have that may be different from what a kind of a CSA community or just a kind of rural town community would have as an expectation of a farm that's in the middle of where they live?
To say that we don't have a CSA community would be wrong. We do have several CSA communities. Each of the farm incubators market and have their own pool of CSA members. We, the Learning Farm, have our own CSA as well. So each farm, there's probably, how many are there, 10, 11? There's probably about 10 or 11 farms that have CSAs on all within the Prairie Crossing farm complex. So I think the difference is that we're very open to the public. We welcome people from the community to come and visit, to come and learn about things that we're doing, and are pretty much an open book. As for other farms, we have a lot more staff, a lot more time to be able to take time to educate people. We have programs to educate people, tours, And so we're very open to the public and want people to come visit, learn more about what we're doing, and therefore, by gaining knowledge, we'll start to support the local food movement and sustainable agriculture that way.
And I can speak to your previous question a little bit, too. This is Eric. You are correct in saying that Prairie Crossing was established, you know, in the early 90s with 10 guiding principles, and those have definitely influenced our program from the inception. Particularly, our program with area high school students, we really have made an effort to include economic and racial diversity, and feel like it's not just something that we should be doing. It is a huge benefit to have as many different kinds of folks with different backgrounds contributing to our program, so that we're all learning. We have folks here that have backgrounds farming in Mexico. One of our incubator farmers is from India, and just the kind of background that they bring from their experiences farming abroad, the way they answer certain questions to certain problems enriches us all, and it's a real blessing to be a part of a place like that.
Well, one thing that it you know is plainly obvious when you attend agricultural conferences, be they conventional or sustainable or organic alternative ag events, is that the predominant demographic is white people. And, mm-hmm. and you know, obviously that skews heavily towards white male when you are talking about ranching or even just crop farming. And but really the inclusion of non-farm background, urban, minority, women, non-English speaking farmers in this kind of upward mobility into becoming owner operators of farms can occur, you know, really occurs best with some set of support, because it is so difficult to start a small business of any kind in the United States, but then particularly if you don't have any social network to draw from or are what USDA would call socially disadvantaged. The challenges are tremendous. Could you reflect on how those members of your community and the incubator community in particular, you know, once supported and kind of incubated by Prairie Crossing, how does that prepare them to go out into the wider, the big bag, real world, agricultural world to continue to grow their business and be, you call them hatchlings? Would you give a word for that?
Well, I'd be happy to take a stab at your question. This is Eric. The three of us here are not really a part of that incubator program that's run by some of our other colleagues. We're focused primarily on youth education, but I would say that people here in the incubator program are running a real business. They have markets at some of the best markets in Chicago. They learn the struggles of planting and maintaining a budget and operating with a crew of employees, all the weather challenges. And so the program here is a real chance to try out farming without necessarily needing to raise all the money that it would take to purchase land and equipment. And we've had some people graduate from the program. We tend to call them graduates of our program. But I could just briefly say how it relates to our youth farming program is it gives us an example. It gives us multiple examples to point to. Our neighbors, the people using our land, are real people forming real farm businesses, solving problems in their own particular way, drawing upon their skills. And it's a great example for our students to look out and see that. Our students are all talented people who solve problems differently and have different dreams, and they have not just one person they can look out and see, but they have many who are all trying to succeed in farming.
Well, I suppose it's not fair to ask you so much because you're in the educational department, but have you had graduates of the program who've gone on and relocated their businesses kind of outside of your incubator, in that sense, like hatch them out into the world after they build their real business, their real brand, their real QuickBooks, you know, their real delivery van, et cetera? Are they really able to move it off-site, or is it still kind of in the in-situ support system phase? Or is that even a goal?
No, it is a goal. The program is 6 years old, and we've had several graduates. The one that we have a graduate, Temple Farm Organics, is a graduate of our program. I'm sure you can Google that and find them online. They're doing very, very well on 60 acres, only about 12 miles from us. It is definitely a goal of the program that people graduate in 5 years. The program, like I said, is about 5 or 6 years old. We've had others. Mike and Claire's Produce was launched here, and I believe perhaps one more, although I'm drawing a blank. But already in about 5 years, we've already got some successes under our belt.
Okay, so let's go back and talk more about the educational aspects, since that's where you guys are focusing your energy, and it seems unfair to make you answer incubator questions. One thing that's striking here in the Hudson Valley, we just had a kind of hyper-local young farmer research project that was done by the Hawthorne Valley Farmscape Ecology. Hawthorne Valley is similar to Prairie Crossing in that it's a real hub of activity around farming and in many ways a model community with a school and summer camp and bakery and all these things. And they did a study, basically like anthropology, about young farmers in the valley. And in every single case, when they did 18 in-depth profiles, in every single case, the farmers remembered the beginning of their farming impulse from childhood, and not necessarily from being involved in commercial agriculture on a family farm, but from visiting on a school trip, visiting a grandmother or relative farm, et cetera. And I wonder, how do you handle that, like, kind of balance, the tender balance of, like, not being propagandist, but still figuring out how to tap these kids and make them into farmers? Maybe you can just talk about how do you try to teach these kids just kind of about rural living? Well, I guess my question was basically, how do you do it without forcing them to think about being farmers, still plant the seeds of becoming a farmer? So I don't know if you heard the whole preamble.
Yeah, I think you were asking how do we... you're asking, are we shoving it down people's throats, or are we, how do we do this without just being propaganda machines for sustainable farming? That's the gist of it, correct?
That's the question I wanted.
Well, I Logan and I can speak to that, and we do have an 18-year-old participant of our program here, Zamir, who I'd love to hear his reflections on whether or not he feels like we brainwashed him. But I think I'll just briefly say, this is Eric, that people today are really interested in where food comes from, and it doesn't matter what demographic you're from. People of all times and all places, we always eat food. Food is the most essential part of our life. It shapes our daily life. It shapes our cultural identity. And when you get people talking about food, it breaks down a lot of barriers. And so, you know, in our program, we do a lot of cooking. You know, we're out in the fields working together. So much of what we do is action, and people can fall in love with the actions of farming and cooking and preparing food without us ever really saying, you know, anything that might be construed as a political statement for or against a particular kind of farming.
Yeah, to feed off what Eric was saying, I never felt that way at all. I've always felt like whenever they did speak about something that I didn't understand, it just sparked, you know, natural curiosity. Just being outside around it, like, always asking, what's this, having the educational sessions and explaining, you know, on a basic level, to even going, you know, scientific or even going into biology, it really intrigued me, and I wanted to learn more about it, and I felt that's why I just connected with it and just became so much more passionate that I just wanted to keep on learning more. And, you know, we're not just sitting down getting lectured, we're going on different field trips, we're watching videos, we're going out into the fields, learning, and we're actually, you know, seeing the material and looking at these, like, specimens that we're actually talking about, and we're growing and we're learning with it along with the program. So we're seeing the changes along that we're actually hearing and learning about, and we're viewing them right in front of our eyes. So I guess that's how I sort of always taken it in. I've never thought that, you know, it was all propaganda and brainwashing, but I've always thought it was just something that they just loved loved talking about and wanting to expand and just get a different generation's view on, you know, what has come to, like, farming today. And that's sort of what I want to carry on and have that young voice be heard. And hopefully I will still be as passionate as I am today.
And do they make you work hard in the field for a long time?
Well, it is a working farm, and we do work out in the fields, but never where I'm about to, like, pass out or, you know, faint of overwork.
Did you hear my question?
It's a good balance, which I really like, because it isn't like I'm just coming here and just sitting around and just plucking at weeds, but I'm doing a different variety.
Hello, did anyone hear my question?
Yeah, I heard your question.
No, we're having serious not being able to hear each other problems.
He said that he could hear your question. Can you not hear him at the moment?
No, I can't hear him.
Oh, okay. Perhaps if there's any way that you could speak a little bit closer into the receiver, that would be very helpful. Zamir.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Are you responding to, do they make you work for a really long time outside in the hot sun?
Yeah. So, like I stated, it's never like we're out working, you know, for the longest hours. It's a good balance between work and educational sessions. So I never felt that we were always out there just sweating. But I like how it is, you know, work, and that we're not just sitting around plucking at weeds. There's always a different thing to do each day. I can be, you know, helping out the chickens one day and then go harvesting and then doing some weeding. And, you know, I'm never just sitting there. I'm always doing something, which I liked with this job. It's definitely different, and it's very dynamic, and you definitely gain so much more characteristics about yourselves, not just, like, physical, but mentally and just intellectually and maybe even spiritually. Like, it definitely makes you embrace what you have been given and what you're learning and using it, you know, even outside of work.
Do you have a sense already of what areas you might focus on or where you might put your life in terms of farming?
Yeah, so I'll be attending Earlham College actually in a couple weeks. I'll be hopefully majoring in environmental studies studies and hopefully getting maybe a certificate in sustainable agriculture or just something along the side of that. My goal right now, which I think would be pretty cool, is maybe come back here and start as one of the incubator farmers, renting some land and just having at it and just seeing where it'll take me. But that's sort of my long-term goal right now, is just to open up my own farm and just take it on.
And you're not scared of how unaffordable land is or how inaccessible credit is or all of the other terrible busy work involved? You're unafraid and you're...
I would probably definitely a rush of emotions that come by. I've definitely witnessed accounts of the other farmers of where they want to pull their hair out or other days where it just runs smoothly. It all comes with a title, and I feel like the experience that I'm getting here is just preparing me even more, just like a stepping block for me to be prepared, and I'm just ready. I know I still have school left, but I feel like this job has given me so much more, a different inside scoop, a different view of what actually goes on, not just the outside surface of, oh, we're a farm and we grow produce, but the actual nitty-gritty business and, supplies and how it all works and, how it needs to unfold.
And you're going to do vegetables or you're going to do mixture, vegetable and livestock, or what's the kind of...
Do you already
have a name of your farm?
I'm still working on that. I'm still learning so much more. I still have 4 years of school to go, so I'm not sure what kind of farm or the name or where, but I know that I'd like to have that someday.
All right. Well, I look forward to checking back in. I hope we'll both still be around in the next 4 years. We can remember this moment, and you'll say, "I figured out the name of my farm."
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
So this was the question for Logan. You're running this program right now, as an educator. Are you feeling like that's you want to be an educator forever, or is being an educator a good kind of tempering force for agriculture and a good way to have a salary until you want to start your own farm, or are you feeling like being an educator is your role forever?
I definitely think that being an educator is more of my focus in that when you learn about things in textbooks, that's one thing, but here on the farm, we have a lot of experience and experiential opportunities for the students to learn hands-on by doing, and I feel that that's why Prairie Crossing Learning Farm is such a unique experience, because they're learning about a variety of different things. We talk about biology and botany and the food systems all by doing it outside. The classroom where we have our educational sessions is outside, and we learn about insects, animals on the farm, beneficial compost, and the biology of that. So I think that the opportunity to teach outside and actually be involved and immersed in what we're teaching is really unique and something that I really value. It deepens the understanding of the students that you're trying to teach. They connect on a deeper level by actually being able to experience it, not just look at pictures or read about it. Everyone learns in their own unique way, and by having the actual experience and being able to talk about it through discussion and reading is just so multifaceted that it really, you're able to understand the concepts that we discuss in depth, and they're often very complex concepts. So I think that if I was in a classroom just solely teaching from books, it would be a lot more discussion and not as hands-on and not as interesting to to learn about. So by teaching outside, it really piques students' interest in sustainable agriculture, and I think that that really helps them get interested, want to become more involved through that hands-on experience.
Well, and it sounds like for you also, teaching outside, you know, learning outside is great for the students, and teaching outside is more gratifying for the teachers. When people leave your program, do they get a certificate of some kind, or is there like some accreditation toward well, for instance, an FSA loan that would help them start financing a startup farm operation, or kind of a reference that apprenticeship type learning experience that they would, you know, oh, they're coming from Prairie Crossing, they're going to be a good apprentice, or they're going to be a good farm worker?
I think having been through the Prairie Crossing Learning Farm, the Prairie Farm Corps program, like you said that, oh, they're coming from Prairie Crossing, they have a certain amount of credibility in that. A lot of our members have gone to, that have completed our Prairie Farm Corps job training program in the summer. The following summer, they've went and worked on organic farms, like the farm incubators will hire them. And a lot of the farm incubators feel confident in hiring them because we're able to speak on their behalf and have worked with them for a whole season, that it's more of a, they have more confidence in hiring someone that they don't know, that they know has been through the Prairie Crossing program and know has an interest and some educational experience in sustainable agriculture, than as opposed to someone who has not. But we haven't.
Someone just off the street, as it were.
Yeah, we haven't. We don't really discuss FSA loans with them, as a requirement to be in the Prairie Farm Corps program is you have to be a high school student, and that it works well because we have them starting to work in early April to get the farm ready to start sowing seeds and stuff like that, and often isn't possible to work with college students being away until late spring, early summer, coming home from summer break. So we, all of our members are high school students, in that they can come in a couple days a week in the evenings to really get the farm up and running before the main growing season starts.
Well, and, you know, it's a great thing that the agricultural schedule is compatible with the school schedule. How do people find your program? Is it advertised in schools or word of mouth? Or, I mean, obviously, all of these farmers selling at farmers markets must do a great job of getting the word out. But do you guys do promotion to like guidance counselors, or what would you suggest for other programs that are similar in terms of getting attendance for the training program?
What we've done and have found works really well is gone with information flyers to local high schools and talked to guidance counselors. Often there's transition specialists that help students in need get jobs. We have relationships with the local high schools in our area that we work closely with to set up interviews and post flyers on job boards and really interview that way. Another way that we've advertised is at youth centers where kids go to hang out after school. We found that that works really well. But by far, the best way that we have found that has been tried and proven is going to local high schools, talking to guidance counselors that have the relationship with those students, and really finding out which students would be a good fit, because it is a really demanding job. It is a unique job in that it can be challenging at times. So the counselors, the guidance counselors, the teachers have a relationship with those students, and they can have discussions with those students to really find out if they'd be a good fit. And because we want to have as many kids complete the program as possible and not quit or drop out because it's they found out that it's something that they don't want to do.
So this is all, this is very good suggestions. Those who are listening to this program and who are not yet aware of the Farm-Based Education Network and the Farm-to-School Movement and Farm-to-Cafeteria Conference, which is upcoming in Vermont the weekend after that at Shelburne Farms, this kind of programmatic discussion of how to make sure that you are getting the word out to your prospective clientele, which, of course, are the prospective young farmers for the future of American nutrition, is a very important recruitment that has to happen. And the insights that you share there with the guidance counselors, that's the kind of insights you would be able to get by tuning into those kind of educator networks. And I recommend heartily that if you're interested in that kind of stuff, that you tune into that conference in Shelburne Farms. Any last words or resources that you guys wanted to point towards books, organizations, models around the country that would serve the interests of those who are pursuing similar work?
Yeah, I definitely have one that comes to mind, and that we've modeled our program, our Farm Corps program, off of somewhat, and it's a pretty widely known one. You've probably heard of it, the Boston Food Project.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, and so we kind of took that concept in working with youth and a lot of their resources that they have available in print publication and online to kind of get a starting point, because it is overwhelming to just start from scratch and reinvent the wheel, and they have a lot of great resources in topics to talk about, inspiring motivation, and kind of structuring the program if you don't really know where to start. They have great resources for you to get ideas and kind of make your own program and develop what's unique about your program from that. But it's always great to start with some resources to have advice or ideas, and they do a great job of doing that with different team-building activities and educational things that they talk about that can be applicable to your farms that you're trying to start or the group of youth that you're working with.
So doing your homework and your research is critical for all serious humans, but particularly in this important job of farm-based education, and I appreciate the reference. I should interview those guys. That would be really fun. That project is really groundbreaking. So we'll leave this discussion for another day, and I thank you guys so much for joining me on what must be a very hot afternoon there. It's certainly a very hot afternoon here, I just hope we get to meet sometime, basically.
Yeah, that would be great. And thank you for taking the time to talk with us.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you.
All the best. Thank you for your work.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.